Okay, hello and welcome to another Freebooters. This time available on Spotify and also YouTube Music or whatever YouTube does its podcasts on. I signed us up.
There's like audio podcasts on?
Yeah, I think it's done through YouTube Music.
I've never even seen YouTube Music. I remember Google Music back in the day that let you upload your own MP3s. I used that for a while.
Oh, okay. I think this is different. I think this is like, it's YouTube, but it's basically focused for, you know, playing stuff in the car.
You have to be subscribed to get that? Because they do, you know, sometimes when you're on YouTube and then they offer you
players'
money. And one of them is, YouTube Music they keep offering.
I think that's involved in like the YouTube Premium package or whatever. I think you can get YouTube Music for free with ads. I don't know, honestly, couldn't tell you. But YouTube have this thing where you can just put in your podcast RSS feed, and it does everything. It just takes does everything for you.
Yeah.
As does Spotify. But I needed to make some adjustments to Plock because. Each podcast service has slightly different places where it looks for things like, metadata.
This is one of the reasons I hate RSS. It's not a fucking standard. I wish it was an actual standard. And because it's not just, different services look for the information in different places. But on top of that, some of them add their own tags. They add their own service-specific tags, which if you want to use the service, you've got to add. But I resent having to add them, Why it's encompassed in the standard.
And also all the FOSS podcasting directory listings, they all work out of the box.
Because it works in the more standard way,
So I don't even think this is necessarily a standards thing. Because if it was a standard, I think iTunes and whatever would break it anyway. Because they do, that's what they do.
They've got enough muscle to force people to adhere to their way of doing, or adapt to their way of doing things, haven't they? Whereas FOSS projects are generally more...
Well, you say that, but like iTunes have set a way, Spotify doesn't follow it. Spotify sets a way, YouTube doesn't follow it.
Yeah, no, that's true.
All things considered, once I worked out where they're looking for the information, it was trivial to just put it into the script.
Yeah, but you shouldn't have to. When the purpose of RSS is to not have to do that kind of thing. it's kind of defeats the point. I always come back to like you might as well just scrape the website at that point. Just gives more scrape. I mean, it's not true, but
But do that sometimes. Although to be honest, RSS feeds and all that kind of stuff. I don't know. It's fun to play around with.
I do wish RSS because I mean it is. You are essentially in most cases, especially with text.
Yeah.
It's just a second format that contains the exact same content as the primary format.
With none of the formatting.
Like, HTML should be able to do that on its own. There should be, some very standardized like meta tag, like tags that you put around tags that say this is the body. I mean, we have body tag now. I mean, I'm thinking more back in the day. Like, if HTML was more standard, you wouldn't need RSS.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, you've got it with... But even HTML5 isn't super standard because you've got the body tag, but that's everything visible. Then you've got the header tag, which is presumably just like your logos and stuff, or your.
That's the problem. It's all very sort of vague, isn't it? What is a header?
What is
the body?
And then you've got the navigation tag for navigation stuff. That is actually a bit more straightforward. Then you've got main. Which I think is for everything outside of those. So if you were going to scrape, main would theoretically be... Not everyone uses main. I don't think use main.
You've got article as well.
Article, yeah. Aside.
I do feel like they're... Because I remember there was a point in HTML's development where they were very adamant that the markup be semantic.
Yes.
Rather than presentational.
Yeah.
But then... There's certain things that are in a grey area of whether they're not everything is definitively semantic or definitively that they hit up against that, I think. And then things start overlapping, and then you sort of have multiple tags that are kind of the same thing. It really just needs sort of redoing from scratch.
Well,
also none of this is going to work with a dynamic site and a paginated site. You know, in terms of a feed, you would have to tell the server, "Don't paginate this. Give us the whole thing."
Yeah.
Or just feed system. I don't know.
I don't know. I don't like pagination as a general rule of thumb. I'd rather just make the website load the whole, like, because we can do that now. Unless
I mean, I think there's, you know, if there's literally tens of thousands of things, then maybe paginate it. Just for
categorize it would be better though, wouldn't it? Just you can, if you've got tens of thousands of anything.
I mean, if it's a list of equal things of completely equal worth and that can't really be subdivided. I mean, the situations where that's the case, I'm just sort of like imagining. But I'd rather have pagination than lazy loading. I hate lazy loading.
Sorry, is lazy loading infinite scrolling?
Yeah. Which means you can't fucking search.
Oh, so you mean, when you say lazy loading, you mean the stuff that only loads when the screen is on it?
Yeah.
Oh.
You scroll down to the bottom and then it loads the next chunk, and then you scroll down and then it loads the next chunk.
Yeah, and that's in HTML standard now, isn't it? Or certain things are, right?
Oh,
I could be wrong, but I think things like, I think it might be CSS, it might be HTML, where, like, for example, you'd set it on an image, don't load the image until it can be seen.
Mm. Because that started in like frameworks, didn't it? Where you load a web page these days, and you just get a load of like grey placeholders for everything.
I hate that.
I fucking hate that.
That is bonkers to me. Like, I don't understand. Is it the case, right, that websites like YouTube, because YouTube, of course, notorious for doing it, are they so big and so complicated, and the caching system for it is so big and so complicated that helps them in any meaningful way?
I mean, that's exactly it. If we're all running our own individual websites, saving 1% on how much energy it's using or bandwidth would, like, we don't care. Like,
yeah.
But if you're a corporation like Google spending billions on these things, then 1% of a billion is a lot of fucking money. Yeah.
Yeah. That, right? I guess so as well.
It's a function of things getting too big.
Yes. But it's also just. Because smaller sites don't typically use it. It's all the appification of stuff as well.
Well, I think I mentioned this before because I love this for some reason. But back in the day, this is years ago, because Facebook was made in PHP.
Mm-hmm.
But then PHP is, you know, relatively slow. And again, big company, if they can shave off some efficiency, they can save a lot of money. So they continued writing the site in PHP, but then they wrote a thing that compiles PHP to C. And so it's running on C, which is far more efficient. And the technology they invented to compile PHP to C, they called hip hop, which is such a like, hey fellow kids kind of.
Hey fellow hip hop. Does it mean anything? Does the
I don't know. Probably.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No. Yeah. I think you've told me that story before. Which I don't know. I get. And that is clever.
It's clever, but there shouldn't. Again, it's a function of things getting too big. Like things like that.
PHP is just it's a server side language. It's always going to lean on the server. So if you've got a server that serves a lot of people,
if you can make your server run C rather than PHP, then it's going to run more efficient for sure.
Honestly, why not just? Well, there's obvious reasons for this. Load everything in JavaScript on the client side. Do you just send the bare bones of stuff?
I mean, that's kind of what. I mean, we've sort of got the worst of both worlds now, because, like, there's downsides to doing everything on server-side dynamic, right? That's why we make static websites, because a blog site that's showing every visitor the same page but dynamically recreating it from scratch for every visitor. I mean, there's caching, but that's silly. But now it's just essentially, I mean, I'm exaggerating, but the browser is just sort of a database client.
Yeah.
It's querying a database, getting a load of JSON back, and then using client-side JavaScript to construct what we see, which is like it's the two worst ends glued together.
I mean I suppose you could argue that what Gemini was trying to do, where it was just where their RSS feeds and
there was no
end user stuff was the feed, same,
right? Yeah. It just notified you when the content changed.
Although there was the option to it, like, I don't entirely know where the standardization for the feed comes from. I don't remember reading it in the specs, if I'm honest. And it might have just been something the browser started implementing.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, I think it's just because the format is so simple.
Yeah, it would have been good to, because I think some browsers will look for a JSON feed. Like, I think Amphora looks for a JSON feed.
Oh, really?
And Lagrange looks for an actual feed, a Gemini.gem file, but also you can do it with a JSON feed. One of them does Atom as well for some reason. But like, in order to hit all the browsers, you're starting to get that problem where, oh, a standard hasn't been set, the browsers are trying to do their own thing.
Was Agate the one I was using, or was that the server? No, Amphora. I was using Amphora. That just spotted the content change. I think it just hashed. It did a hash of the content, and then when like it periodically rehashed it, and if the hash was different, said, "Oh, this is updated."
Oh, okay.
So it's not like an RSS feeder where you get the text. I think that's how it worked. It's not like an RSS feeder where you get a distinct, you know, there's this new atomic thing that has happened. It was more just this page is updated. You might want to read that. But yeah. That, I mean, that's for a blog. It's functionally the same thing when you don't need a more lightweight way to interact with it, because your Gemini browser already behaves like an RSS reader.
Yeah.
So you don't need a secondary layer. I prefer that approach.
Yeah.
I was going to mention Gemini. Some people are still using Gemini, of course. Mm-hmm. Some people will probably continue using Gemini for decades. But is it, for practical intents and purposes, is it dead?
I was wondering this, because I'm thinking, do I want to spend time making a mirror and having it ticking on by? Inquiring minds want to know. Let us know, like you, the listener, you let us know if you're using Gemini, if you'd like us to be more present on Gemini, or go for
one,
it,
one of the things that sort of nudged me away from Gemini was reading posts by people who like retro computing. Like people who genuinely make use of things like Commodore 64.
Mm-hmm.
And like to do modern things on old computers.
Okay.
And Gopher still works with that. Gopher, quite similar to, not in terms of the formatting, but quite similar. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, very text, unmarked up, text-based protocol. So yeah, Gopher works great on those devices. Yeah. You literally cannot do Gemini because of the SSL. Those CPUs can't do, you know, the encryption, obviously.
Yeah.
I sort of thought of Gemini as, you know, when the apocalypse happens and we're all just incredible, we're all just running on wind turbines and solar panels. We don't really care about energy. So we're all going to be using Raspberry Pis.
Yeah.
Do we want the, you know, something that can be good? I mean, Gemini does work on that. So not best, but, you know, we're using scavenged, Commodore 64 CPUs and whatever we can cobble together.
Yeah.
I like the idea of things running on, you know, very not powerful technology.
Yeah. I heard.
And the addition of SSL to Gemini, I think it doesn't do anything. Nobody's man in the middling your Gemini site.
I was looking for, I think it's called Mercury, but I could be wrong on that one, which is a re-implementation of Gemini without the SSL.
Yeah, I think it's okay. If Gemini had been that to begin with, I think it would have taken off better than it did. But I think coming in later with that, I think just, it doesn't work. No. Why not just use Gopher at that point? I mean, it's a fiddlier syntax, that's why not. But
how much fiddlier is it?
Well, I'll show you my Gemini sort of index. They don't call it an index anyway.
Okay.
Gopher map, that's what they call it.
A Gopher map.
There's my Gemini Gopher map.
Okay, right.
So plain text is just plain text.
Yep.
And then if you just do a link to something by putting a line of text and then a path, then that works for text files, as you can see in my log.
Yeah.
And then links to other things like an H. Also, I think it varies depending on what server you're using. an H indicates a link out to the web.
Yep.
And you don't, there's no gap. It's like H and then the title and then the link. And then that's about all I'm using there. So it's a little, it's not as, and you know, you don't have headings that format up as headings and stuff like that. It's just plain text.
Just plain text.
Yeah.
What about line breaks?
In the text itself? Yeah, it'll just display as if you're looking at it in the text editor.
Okay. So you got to put in your own line breaks.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've got okay, and is that a script that's mirroring it? Mirroring your
posts? I've got a script that Actually, I don't think I use a script anymore, actually. I take, because I write Markdown for Blop.
Yeah.
And then I currently manually take the Markdown and turn it into Gemini, because they're very close.
Yeah.
And then I've got a thing that automatically generates the Gopher stuff from the Gemini stuff.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and there's no, like, Gemini has, like, you know, a way of doing, well, I mean, this does have links. You link to other text files, but, but I don't know. The more I'm talking, the more I'm thinking Gopher's actually okay.
Yeah, it doesn't look. Is it a tab? Is that what's separating the?
I think it's white space.
Oh, any
it might be tab, but I'm not sure.
Okay, what's slash log, by the way?
As in like blog.
Oh, okay.
That's so my, yeah.
It's not. So you got /log/file name.
Yeah.
Is that from the working directory or is that?
Yeah, from the root, yeah. Or yeah, from, yeah, it'll be from, yeah, it'll be a relative path, but okay. Slash indicates an absolute path.
Okay. Yeah, the slash makes it look like an absolute path, but it's not an absolute path, it's a relative path.
No, it's an absolute path, yeah. Same as on a web server. If you did .slash, it would be a relative path.
Okay, yeah. Okay. But as from the web server side of things, okay, yeah, I gotcha. I mean, that's certainly a workable syntax. It's totally fine.
I do sort of feel like, and I think this was some people's argument at the time, that Gemini doesn't really add enough above Gopher to justify it, and at the same time adds the SSL requirement.
Yeah, okay. How easy is it to set up a Gopher server compared to, say, a gate?
The same, I would say, without the SSL hassle.
Oh, so you just, what, presumably there's something in Debian repos or something that'll do it, is it? Or would
yeah,
you...
I can't remember what I'm using for, and I moved it over the other day, I can never remember what Gopher, Gofernicus, that's what I'm using.
Oh, Gofernicus, I'm Gofernicus.
I'll type it in chat for reference. Gofernicus.
Gofernicus.
I'm pretty sure that's what I'm using. Because yeah, I'm thinking of just switching my Gemini off.
Hmm. To me, a lot of it comes down to one of the arguments that was from the beginning of Gemini is why not just make a website that functions minimalistically? It's accessible to more people.
It is, but then I think the point of Gemini is to reject the infrastructure, it's not just a presentational argument, right? It's to reject these web browsers that use 2 gigs of RAM the moment you open them. Like, that is absurd to display a page of text.
Yeah, but something else which is sort of making that same statement is Dillo, the Dillo browser.
Yeah, but then you are using the web but can't use most of the web. So,
yeah. But it's like, still, but you're still using more of the web than you would be of Gemini in a Gemini browser, in an absolute sense.
I'm not sure that's true. I think you're just going to encounter, just in normal, even if you're trying to stick to the small web, you know, I mean, as soon as you try and use a search engine, like, and yeah, you can use the small web listing sites. I mean, that works. I think what we really need is to have a union of human beings, mm-hmm. of which every member of the human race is a member, and then we all en masse say the only web browser we're using is Dillo. So if you want your sites to work, make them work on Dillo, Amazon, and Facebook, and YouTube.
Well. I suppose, I don't know, like, I mean, I like Dillo, to be fair, it's not just Dillo, Lynx, that, you know, I
yeah, some, yeah, Lynx, yeah.
And
yeah.
Actually, because I, when I'm looking at RSS feeds on my computer, I use Newsboat, and I use Lynx, and that actually works well enough, although, to be honest, RSS, if, like, in and of itself, is actually quite good, quite close to what we're actually looking for, because it is fundamentally a text-only syntax and you know, if in the body of the RSS stuff, you can put plain text stuff, all the stuff there.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. If we just reject web browsers and just use RSS.
I have considered, like, what I could do for Plock, but I won't, is just make it build an RSS feed. Because once you submit your podcast to various directories, it will build the front end for you. You just give them the Spotify link, or you give them the Open Index podcast link or whatever, and it will throw up your podcast in a playable player.
I like that as an idea. My problem with that is, It's a minor problem, but it's just that XML is such an ugly format.
Yeah, sure.
Like something Markdown-y where the heading denotes like a new item. Like just like it'll be so much like
it is, it is. But I'm trying to think of things that we already have that are already used to some
degree. I think it's a good idea. It's just that would be the one catch for me, it being fucking XML.
But it's trivial to make trivial. See, I'd love to be able to do stuff that doesn't involve XML Starlet, which is the little dependency I use to read XML stuff and put it, you know, and if I'm making a master feed out of several different RSS feeds, mm-hmm. XML Starlet makes that like relatively trivial. Whereas without it, I presumably would have to do some sort of sed magic, which.
Yeah, I've only ever done it with sed and it is a pain in the fucking ass.
See, because it's like. Theoretically, like I could describe what I wanted, right? So, for example, things between a title tag in the items, you know. Mm. So you isolate each item, do a loop for that, and then you isolate the title tag, and then was it the description tag that has all the content or something like that? And then I don't know. You take everything between those tags. You maybe put them into temp files and then slap them together in a text file.
If I was inventing the format, it would be Markdown based, and it would be like you say, it would be denoted by level one. Level one headings would denote an individual atomical thing, and then it would have a date underneath in a standard format, and then it would be the content, which could be a URL link to a file or text or both. There'd be no description. Because that's what your fucking a title is, a description. You don't need a title and a description. Fuck off. Mm-hmm. No summary. If the software wants to take a summary, just truncate the text, and that's it. Just like three things. Was that four things? That's all I would do.
You could minimize it even further. You could do like the Gemini way. I quite like. You have your year, month, day, date, white space, title, white space, link, or something to that effect.
Or body text. I think rather than white space, I'd do it on lines, but yeah. Because, I mean, the reason we end up with the convoluted formats that we have now, like JSON and YAML and XML, is because these things didn't come out of Unix.
Okay,
if these things had come out of Unix, you'd have, you know, things delineated by white space or new lines, because that's how Unix works, right? Wing's been doing something interesting. And going back to what we were talking about before, he's getting really into doing CGI, as in the server technology.
What kinds of stuff are you doing that?
He's made like a sort of a messaging system. And he showed me something the other day, and it was really interesting. And I've forgotten what it was.
What's he doing it in?
He's using, because I mean, the one of the big upsides of CGI is you can use any language you like.
Yeah, yeah.
As long as the language runs on the server, you can use Bash, you can use C, you can use whatever you want. He's using Hair.
I don't know Hair.
I think Hair is a relatively newer language. Yeah, Hair as in the animal, not Hair as in stuff that's not on my head anymore. I think CGI, especially for those of us who like running our own stuff and playing around, rather than installing PHP or, you know, some... I mean, really, a scripting language like PHP on a web server, it's doing the same job as CGI. It took over from CGI. And it's, I guess it's more sort of constrained. It's sort of safer in some ways. You're not sort of accessing deep system things, but it's far less fun.
Okay, yeah. Okay. What about Python?
Yeah, I mean, I don't like Python myself, but yeah, any language that works on the... Because it works in the Unix-y way, you know, it's text in, text out.
Yeah, yeah. Because I sometimes, when I've tried to do stuff in Plock, I've Googled around for it, and they go, and a lot of the time the response is, this is so much easier to do in Python. All you got to do in Python is duh, duh, duh. I'm thinking, you know.
Yeah, but that's one of the, coming across those kind of things is what made me start writing stuff in Python. But when you start writing stuff in Python, and you realize how much is wrapped around those simple bop, bop, bops, how much fucking nonsense you have to do to get that bop to work.
Mm.
It's no, Bash is so much easier.
Okay.
90% of things, I would say. In my opinion, the Python people will disagree. This is going to be like the Fallout New Vegas thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, Python people to arms.
People who love Python do love Python. They are nice, though. I think Python users generally are. Like, there's some languages okay. where if you insult them, like, yeah.
Okay. All right. Do you want to call out any languages in particular, or are you going to keep your head below that parapet?
C#.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're fanatics. But no, Python, any Python user, if you want to come at me, you've got to defend __init__, whatever the fuck nonsense you have to do to make an object. It's ridiculous.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Well, so what kind of stuff has... So messaging, you said, with the Wing.
Yeah. But it was something more interesting for me that he showed me the other day, and I just... Because my memory's shit.
Well, it's the heat, isn't it?
And the heat. It's going to be 35 in a couple of days.
I tell you what, people cannot drive in this weather.
Nobody can do anything in this
no.
weather.
No. Oh, my God.
To you as a person.
Yeah. I almost saw a Bentley just cause hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of damage by just doing some stupid driving the other day. Like,
and I actually watched a video about, mm-hmm. I watched several videos. I was like, just one day I was like, what are luxury cars like now? Like, what are the top of the range luxury cars? You know, not as in sports cars, as in, you know, like Rolls Royce, Bentley kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I looked at a few reviews on YouTube of like the top end Bentleys.
Mm.
And they have things like when you open the door, it projects the Bentley logo onto the ground in front of where you get in.
So people know you've got a Bentley when they're getting into it?
People know you've got a Bentley. it's so gauche.
That's cars is a ridiculous thing to spend money on, if I'm honest. Like, it's just,
I mean, if I was wealthy and drove very long distances, I would want like the most comfortable car you can get, and I think that's what those kind of cars are good at,
I suppose so.
But it's just surprising how much tacky shit is on top of that now.
Yeah,
like that wasn't there in the past. Like the idea of it projecting the logo onto the ground, like people, I'm sure, would have sneered at that in the past, and now it's, I think it's new. It's the new go riche, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I tell you what, though, as well, like I'm surprised that like we don't have the conversation about motorcycles more often, because
in what way?
They are so dangerous.
Oh yeah, no God, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like
I've occasionally in my life, I've had motorcyclists get on to me about smoking. I'm like, we're in the same fucking boat here. Like, yeah. I'm only in danger of myself.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it's like, sometimes when they overtake buses, I think, man, just low. Like, just chill out.
I mean, the motorcyclist would say, like, it's usually the other, you know, it's the car's fault.
Oh, they say that. They fucking say that.
Let's take that on what expression we're looking for. Let's take that as if it's true.
Okay, yeah.
Right.
Take it as read.
Even then, that's like saying my hobby is jumping into lion's den.
Yeah.
Like it's not my fault that the lions eat me. You know, like that is the situation.
Yeah.
And you are voluntarily riding this. You're on two fucking wheels going really fast. Like it's a stupid hobby.
Yeah. It is. And also, genuinely, right, I sort of come across a fatal motorcycle accident about once every other month at this point.
Really?
Like, that's just in my day-to-day driving around. I've seen motorcyclists just splayed out on the road dead before. Like, it's just like...
That's horrible. Yeah.
That is horrible. And I'm like...
And at that point, it doesn't matter whose fault it was.
It doesn't matter whose fault it is, no.
Like, well, you know, floating up to heaven with your wings going, well, at least I was in the right.
Yeah, it's like, oh, yeah, St. Peter, he knows his traffic laws, doesn't he? 2023 addition to the highway code hierarchy of the road, isn't it? Yeah.
My sister's fiancé is a motorcyclist, like the sports bikes, you know, the racing type bikes, the street version of them. I think he was saying to me, like, I was saying, like, it's like, doesn't the danger bother you? Like, you know, you are going to have like a bad crash at some point. Like, it's going to happen. It's like, I've never had a crash. Like, I drive carefully and safely and blah, 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 blah.
I'm sure they all think that.
I was like, I was like, okay, but like, of the motorcyclists you know, like, how many of them have not had serious crashes at some point? It's like, okay, not.
And don't get me, yeah, like you say, it doesn't matter whose fault it is. There are plenty of bad car drivers out there. I'll tell you what, white van men, awful. Especially the ones that are freelance. I don't know what it is. Scaffolders are the worst, right? And I don't know. Okay, right. This might not be politically correct, right? But I do kind of have always wondered this. A scaffolder's women. A scaffolder's like
Asian women.
A scaffolder's the. Like, are they the slow ones of the trade industry?
As somebody who's worked on building sites,
yeah,
scaffolders were like the least reliable fucking, because like you need the scaffolding up to do your job, right?
Yeah,
and they'd be like, yeah, scaffolding will be up 8 a.m. on this day, and like 5 days later, the scaffolding's still not up, and phoning them every 10 minutes, and yeah, we're on our way, yeah.
Yeah, because it seems like they're the worst drivers, and they have the biggest vans. So, like,
because scaffolding is long,
yeah, but wide as well. They're like they're really wide vans.
This is another thing. This is one of many, many like most problems in the world will be solved with bamboo.
Yes, yeah. Let it not be said that we
wouldn't need a van.
Yeah, no, and you know something for the what you call it? Not the polar bears, pandas. That's the one. That's something for the pandas as well.
Something for the polar bears.
Hamish will love it, yeah.
And yeah. White wine for the lady.
Mm. I will say that on the whole, I think women are probably slightly more sensible and with it drivers.
I think on the whole, women are generally more sensible, level-headed.
In general, yeah, yeah.
Generally speaking.
However, blonde women in white Range Rovers.
Yeah, I mean, that's, yeah, you get it. It's just a class issue there, I think.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah. But I think people in white Range Rovers in particular kind of do my head in, because it's like, it's a bit like, it's okay, it's kind of like, especially like for a start, right? A lot of men drive white Range Rovers. And I'm like, white Range Rovers to me are a distinctly feminine car. I don't understand. Yeah, yeah, am I the only one that thinks this? Because I see so many men in white Range Rovers. And it's like, if you're driving a 4x4, it should be rugged and manly and be like, oh, I can go off on forest trails and da-da-da. Not with my pristine polish. Is it a status symbol? Is it like when like 18th century landowners had lawns to demonstrate that they didn't need to till the land to earn money? Is this a bit like you have a white Range Rover to say, I can afford a Range Rover, but I don't
have to... Isn't there a King of the Hill episode that's fundamentally about this, where Hank gets a new truck and then people start commenting that that's like a lady's truck?
I think that's a Simpsons episode.
Is it Simpsons?
Yeah, yeah. I think it might be both. It might be a thing because
it might be both.
But yeah, like I don't know why, and it's always the same type of guy that drives this, right? This one also does my nut in, right? It's the baseball cap, sunglasses, t-shirt, and shorts. I dress like a boy, but drive a weirdly expensive but slightly girly car. Very heterosexually coded stereotype, yeah. And to like. I got to be honest, like, I am embarrassed at how men dress in this weather, to be honest, right? Go out on a street.
Accepted, of course.
At least you're, I mean, you got holes in your shirt. That is at least something vaguely novel. And you aren't actually wearing shorts, to be fair. Now, I like shorts. I will defend shorts. I know you don't like shorts. I'm wearing shorts right now. Shorts, in this weather, they're just, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But you look at women and how they dress. They dress with a degree of variety, right? Like, it's just, yeah, you know, various different tops, various different skirts, dresses, shorts, whatever, right? Like, they're, you know, you see goth women, you see non-goth women, the two other archetypes of women.
Two genders.
There is variety in how women dress, even in this weather. Men, it's always fucking baseball cap. Neutral color t-shirt, neutral color shorts, trainers.
It does go back to something that's come up before, which
the Great Indulgence.
Yes, which I still can't remember the name. Was it the Great Renunciation or something?
Something like that, yeah. But we'll call it the Great Indulgence.
Just to sum it up briefly, like, I think it was some point in the late 1700s, maybe 1800s, where men all just decided to dress boring.
Yeah.
Because before that, like, you look at the medieval portraits and stuff, and men dressed, you know, it depends on class, of course, but men who could afford to dress flashy, you know, as flashy as women, you know, colors and textures and shapes and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then there was just a decision to, no, let's all just wear black suits. And we're still kind of, yeah, I mean, we're still in that. Men, broadly speaking, don't dress, like when you dress up, you just wear a suit. Your options are casual wear or a suit. Casual wear all kind of... I think this started... Because before, if you think back to like the 30s, 40s, 50s, just about going into the 60s, like the man of the house, even a working class man, if he was going out into town, he would put on a suit and often a hat as well. But it was uniform, you know. It may be, you know, slight difference in fabric and color and stuff, but dark. Yeah, it was very uniform, and now it's still very uniform. It's, you know, it was in the 80s, it was jeans and t-shirt, and now it's, you know, jeans or cargo pants or whatever, and t-shirt and hoodie, and, you know, it is it's very standard. Which I come down on both sides. Like, I like utilitarianism in clothing. I like functional clothing.
Yeah,
I'm not a big fan of decoration, but I also like the idea of dressing up. Having the option to dress up. Like I think I said, I think it was just in a private conversation, like at the times in my life where I've had to wear a suit for something enjoyable.
Yeah.
Really, it feels really good to dress up and look nice and, you know.
Yeah. Part of it is that all men just look like they dress like children nowadays. That's part of it.
Have you seen the film The Intern? Is it called The Intern?
I don't think so.
The one with... what's the wife of Shakespeare called?
Mrs. Shakespeare, of course.
Anne Hathaway.
Oh, right.
Well, Anne Hathaway and Robert De Niro. And she's like some kind of like startup person. And she hires an elderly person as an intern. And it's Robert De Niro as the elderly person. And it's very schmaltzy, but it's a cute film. But it's, yeah, there's a little scene in that where she talks about how men dress like... Because, you know, he's still wearing a suit when he comes into work and stuff. And he's comparing... She's comparing him to the younger men who, yeah, she says they dress, you know, why do all young men dress like toddlers? And it is true. I see both sides of it. We've come down on just like practical clothing, which I like. But at the same time, there's something a little bit sad about a loss of, I'm reluctant to use the word, but like dignity, you know, having.
No, it is dignity.
Yeah.
It is like the, also the thing is, right, another thing that grinds my gears, right? North Face t-shirts, right? And other, right, brands that stick a fucking big logo. Why the fuck do you want to wear a t-shirt that just has North Face and their fucking corporate logo on the front? Please, inquiring minds want to know.
I've never understood wanting to be a walking billboard. I've never understood that.
That is insane to me. Like, as I understand it, they're not particularly cheap t-shirts, and you can, like... Why? Like... It just looks like you've literally just acquired some sort of corporate hand-me-down and just...
I want to, this is a side issue, but I just want a band baseball hat. If you're not
kind
American.
Of, yeah.
Like Americans can wear them fine, it's part of their culture. But for us, they're not part of our culture. I like, and Rich from Red Letter Media has taken to wearing one. Like, just, you know, the old man like flat cap.
Oh, like,
like flat cap. I think they look nice.
They're
not,
all right.
Not wearing it in like a fashion way, just wearing it as a, you know, put a hat on. I'd rather see a flat cap than a baseball cap.
We need to up our hat game in Britain for a number of reasons. One, this fucking weather, right? Another thing that kind of blows my mind, right? You go outside, hardly anyone is wearing hats. I went out the other day, hardly anyone's wearing hats, and that includes baseball caps. There weren't even that many baseball caps there. Like, it was just, and it's like, do you not understand the effect the sun at this temperature has beating down unprotected from your fucking face? Like,
the only hats I've ever worn are, what do we call them? I'm thinking of all the foreign names for them. Just the wool hat. Just the wool hat.
A beanie?
Beanie would, yeah, Americans would call them, and a toque. Canadians would call them, but yeah, just call them a wool hat. Anyway,
yeah,
those kind of, because I look absurd in hats. I get this from my mum. My mum looks absurd in hats. You put any hat on in me and it just looks ridiculous.
You don't go outside very much, so working on your hat game is maybe a little bit redundant.
Less important, yeah.
But I've got I've got a number of hats now. I'm working on my hat game. I don't have them to handle. I'm wearing headphones, so I can't really do a fashion show. But at the moment, on the buses, I've taken to wearing something similar to a Panama hat. Like, it's a paper hat. Like, you know, it's a sort of a straw hat, like a paper hat, like a beige coloured hat, relatively well made. Marks and Spencer's, so I paid a little bit for it. Nice wide brim. Goes all the way around. Wide brim, important, because if you're driving, we do like 4.5 hour stints between breaks. And in a bus, no air conditioning, and windows open, all that kind of stuff. The sun can be just blasting at you, and you don't always realize it because you've got the window open, you're going down A48 or something like that. And it can really phase you. It can drain you in a way that makes it dangerous to drive. But a hat keeps the sun off your head.
Going back to the 30s, 40s, 50s, if you were middle class going out to work, you get a three-piece suit and a bowler hat, right?
Yeah.
As a man. Maybe later, maybe if you're dressed like a trilby.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like there were hats that make a work. Actually, Panama hats are fascinating. I watched a documentary about Panama hats.
Oh, okay.
The top-tier ones that are handmade,
yeah,
they take... Because they're just literally woven with a grass. I think it's some kind of grass that is, beaten and whatever into a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, the top tier ones take like months to make. It will just be like one old Peru. I don't know if it's Peru, but wherever Panama.
Yeah.
Maybe Panama. Yeah, just one old man just weaving this thing for months on end.
Wow.
They're really beautiful. Yeah, I like that. I think Panama hats are cool.
I think apparently I've been getting a lot of compliments about my Panama hat. Like it.
That's cool.
It's a practical thing, but now I've started thinking, God, this looks like so much better than a baseball cap. I've also got, again, this one's purely a practical kind of thing, a bucket hat, which it's not the most stylish of hats, but it is a substantial step up from a baseball cap because it's got...
90s music festival.
90s music festival. It's got a brim that goes all the way around. So when you're driving and the sun is low in the sky... Especially on a bus, the sun comes, or and any other vehicle really, the sun's coming in at the side, and a baseball cap, peak straight forward. So the sun's coming in at the side. Also, you're still getting a lot of sun on your skin as well with the baseball cap. With the Panama, you know, obviously Panama designed to keep sun off heads, so it is.
I like hoodies actually. I think I find hoodies aesthetically pleasing. I like it. To me, it feels kind of medieval. The idea that we've all gone back to wearing hood, and you sort of like you can hide a little bit in the hoodie as well.
I like hoodies particularly on women because they tend to do interesting things with them. Colors and stuff like that. Men's hoodies, it's just the standard drab.
It still falls into that drab category, but at least everybody looks like a medieval peasant rather than
I'd rather
a hoodie than jeans and t-shirt.
Well, as opposed to jeans and a hoodie.
No, jeans and t-shirt versus whatever and a hoodie. I like the hoodie aesthetically. I like the hoodie more.
Yeah, I guess so. T-shirts just look nothing, don't they? They just look default video game skin or whatever, don't they? Yeah. Like even just a bit of a collar or just something to break it up a little bit.
See, for me, it is. I mean, I assume this is my undiagnosed autism or whatever, but like, I hate feeling my clothes touching me. So I don't want a collar. I want a very thin t-shirt that I can't even really feel touching me. Like, if I start feeling my clothes touching me, it disturbs me. Yeah, I go nuts.
With hoodies, it is quite nice. Is they do have like a kind of a collar to them. Like with other jumpers and t-shirts and stuff, all that neck is exposed to cold wind. Whereas a hoodie gives you, you know, it does cover sort of your neck. Yeah, hoodies are kind of okay, I guess, but I think the devil's in the detail with hoodies.
Well, again, we should go a bit nuts. We should go, you know, like cloaks. We should bring back cloaks. And what's the thing that's not like capes?
Capes.
Like wearing capes again.
Yeah, well, that you see a lot of capes in dystopian stuff, so maybe it is time to bring them back. But, I mean, I just find it embarrassing to be a man when you've got a woman that's clearly, like, wearing, like, a nice summer dress or something, you know, like, something vaguely coordinated, and you just got a t-shirt and fucking black shorts or whatever, like, blah.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if it's embarrassment or just, like, we can do better, guys. Like,
would you want to full on go back to Middle Ages men, like, you know, full on peacock
Like, no,
you know, lustrous textures and shapes and
I mean, if people who want to do that, sure, but like, just
because I mean, pot middle ground, just like, just getting dressed in the morning with that, you know, with that fat, even just a 3-piece suit, like I would like.
No, we don't.
I get tired of it so fast.
No, I don't. I don't really like the suit thing either. But for overlapping reasons, like the suit is like, I don't, you know,
for a uniform again.
I mean, have also one thing I don't like, and I'm not entirely sure why, I don't really like suits where the jacket is the same color as the trousers, because obviously they're supposed to attempt to be matching, but to me, these are not two items that should match, right? You've got,
it's an opportunity to do something with color or whatever.
Well, first of all, it breaks it down. It stops it looking like just a big wall of one color, but also, like, you've got, I don't know what, like, you've got like a light jacket, so not like an overcoat. It goes, it's like below an overcoat, above a jumper, right? Is where the suit jacket lies, right? In the layering hierarchy. And trousers are just like, they are, you know, you got underwear, you got trousers. It just feels like trousers, they're just not that same layer, right? You've got, like, am I explaining it at all appropriate?
No, I get what you mean.
Also, like, trousers, they wear, right? Trousers wear down, right? You're sitting in them, you're walking in them.
Yeah.
If you, you know, so, like, I've heard the advice, for every suit jacket you buy two pairs of trousers, because the trousers will wear out quicker. Just mix and match.
I was just thinking about, maybe it's stereotypical 70s more than real 70s, but thinking back to like 70s menswear, I think it was a bit more expressive. Like, you know, first of all, when I think of like a 70s cop show, and he's wearing like maybe a brown jacket and like a different shade brown flares and like a big tie and an orange shirt, you know, like there was color stuff happening and there was differentiation. It wasn't just a very standard suit, like the flares, you know, it's a decorative thing.
So like, I don't like standard suits. I think we should just, you know, when it comes to workwear, just be a little bit more lenient, I guess, you know, or, you know,
I agree with you, and simultaneously I really like the aesthetic of you know, like revolutionary China. Cultural Revolution era China, where they all wore, you know what you associate Mao wearing.
This
Like a suit. It's kind of halfway between a shirt and a suit and the trousers, and it's all all the same color and all with a standard hat, sort of like that as well. I like both what you're saying, but I also like the uniformity.
It's fine. No, I
But I think if you're gonna do uniformity, you've got to really lean into the utilitarians of it. It's got to be very practical.
Yeah, I guess.
An aesthetic to that.
Why don't we just all wear jumpsuits?
Actually, do you know what? Do you know where does have the variety you're talking about is the British, any also other old countries, but like British military wearing their formal, where when they're wearing their formal, you know, if you've ever seen like, what's it called when they do, like when the king was coronated and a bunch of different army regiments marched in front of his balcony and like, long live the king kind of stuff. And then, you know, you got the, you know, the Scots guards wearing like kilts and the bonnets, and then you've got some English regiment with like looking like they're from the 1700s with like rapiers on their waists and stuff like that.
I mean, that's you know, dress uniforms, I'm guessing. I suppose does each regiment have its own dress uniform, or
the household guard, like, they look fucking absurd, and then the beef eaters at the, you know.
Okay,
like,
all right, yeah. The beef eaters, get rid of those.
The papal guard
okay, why do the beef eaters annoy me, but the papal guard do not?
The Swiss guard, isn't it? They're called.
Yeah.
I love that they like tucked away somewhere. They've clearly always got like an assault rifle.
Yeah,
but they're coming in these big silk, multicolored pajamas with a fucking halberd.
beef eaters, for some reason, I just like, get like, because you are thinking, you know, our head of state is just what, like, being guarded by people in fucking costumes. Like,
you talk about beef eaters or the household guard is the red uniform, and then the Busby hat.
Oh, the household guard, royal household guard.
I think they're the household guard. Yeah, the beef eaters are the ones at the Tower of London.
There's a foot guard, Buckingham Palace. There's the British Guard with the silly helmets.
Yeah, household gear. Yeah. These are the ones you're talking about, right?
They've still got the ridiculously tall... Yeah. Those are beef eaters, right?
No. Oh. Beef eaters are...
Okay.
Yeah, the Tower of London guards, these fellas. This is great that we're doing an audio book. Yeah. You can Google all this yourself.
Those are the beef eaters. They look...
Yeah. I think they're generally retired military men. Who it's sort of like a ceremonial position, and they just... It's a tourist thing, mostly, I think. I don't think... Because the household guard, they are actually active military. They are the household guard. They are functionally. Whereas the beef eaters, I think it's more a ceremonial and touristy.
Yeah. That headwear is just ridiculous. It's the headwear, really.
Which one?
The household guard.
Yeah, I've looked into it. And also, if you notice, like, that they're not very uniform in shape.
No, well, like, because they all have to kill a different bear. Like,
yeah, the one third from the end is basically a sphere.
Yeah.
And the one next to it is very cylindrical. And then a few down, you got one that's half and half. Like, they're very different. It's weird. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I've definitely read into how that came about. Because it doesn't even look... I can't imagine a situation in which that hat is practical.
No. No, are they keeping sweets in it or something?
That's what they're guarding. If you manage to get their sweets, you become the monarch.
Yeah. I don't know. I've never felt. I don't know. All this stuff to me feels daft. Like the stuff with the House of Lords as well.
How is this different from what you're advocating, though? How is this variety different from what? Is it just taste? It's a matter of taste. It's a matter of
no. It's just a matter of sensibility. Like we can not. I mean, if someone just wants to like dress like that as they are go through their life, sure, whatever. Like not, you know, points for like you know doing your own thing. But like you know, aren't we supposed to be like a modern democracy or something? Well, we're not really. But like,
oh yeah, no. I was thinking about this when. Because obviously the Iran war stuff, and I was curious, like, what is... Because, you know, you hear about the IGRC and then the Council of Elders or what, and I was like, how does... What is the actual structure of the Iranian government?
Mm.
And it's like, they have democratic elections, they have a parliament, and then they have this, I don't remember what it's called, but like the Council of Elders who are appointed imam, I don't know if that's the correct term, but like imams. They are religious figures who then have to... They essentially act as like a second chamber. This is my understanding. Mm-hmm. They like a second chamber, like the House of Lords, and they ratify laws. Whether they, you know, is this law according to Islam or not?
Yeah,
essentially. And then you have the Ayatollah as well as the president. And it was like, okay, yeah. So, and then I was thinking, okay, that's not immensely dissimilar from the United Kingdom, where our head of state, the king, who is currently our queen. He's also the head of our national religion, the Church of England, and there are Church of England bishops who automatically get positioned in the House of Lords, which is the second chamber, who get to ratify laws. So we've got other people in the House of Lords, which is the distinction, but we've essentially got the same structure. We are also a theocracy.
I mean, that Lord Spiritual, how many Lords Spiritual are there? Not many.
No, it's been reduced and so on, but they still do exist.
And Labour typically shrink the number of, you know, like that's one thing you can say in favour of Labour, really, is that they're probably a little bit more democratic in that regard.
They are democratic, but we've talked about this a little bit in the past, but I think that the House of Lords, you need to either abolish it or leave it the fuck alone, because it, while it is on paper completely unfair and absurd, historically it's worked quite well.
As a Marxist,
I don't like the aristocratic landowners, you know, as it was before Blair's reforms. Aristocratic landowners get to ratify laws, but the ideal form of that is because they're aristocratic landowners, they're disinterested, you know, in terms of like economic stuff.
Yeah.
And can genuinely, you know, vote on conscience.
Mm.
And while that is the ideal, it's also how it tended to function. Like you did get when the government was overstepping in terms of invading people's privacy or stuff, it was always the House of Lords who said, no, that you can't do that. That's anti-constitutional, you know, that kind of, and it worked well. And the more you make, because when you democratize it, now essentially Lords are appointed by the government.
Yeah.
which means they're part what's the word, partisan.
Yeah.
And have all the conflicts of interests that members of parliament have.
Similarly, I mean, they don't have to worry about elections, which I think is something that...
Yeah, but they're generally old party people.
Yeah.
Who, they've got connections, they're in the system, they're all landlords, it's like you're just replicating the problem. I mean, the alternative is having them directly elected, but then you're recreating the exact same problem. Having somebody who is politically disinterested, or the closest you can get to that, is the best option for a second house. And there's not really...
And I'm very much talking shit here. Maybe that's what the king should be doing.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of wouldn't mind. Yeah, I mean, you've got obvious problems with this. But a king that actually stepped in and their role was to defend our constitution. Like, we don't have a written constitution, but we have a constitution.
Yeah.
It's made up of law. A king who would say, yeah, you can't do this. This is anti-constitutional. This is bad for the people. I mean, interesting idea to try out.
I kind of, because I actually feel a little bit about the monarch that you feel about the House of Lords. Either do away with the monarch or, like, have them serve a purpose.
Well, yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, they still do have those powers. They can refuse to sign laws. They can close parliament still, I think. Yeah, no, they can still close parliament.
I mean, they're the boss of the police and the army. They can do whatever the fuck they like, theoretically.
Yeah. I mean, that's all on paper. It'd be interesting to see if they actually try to whatever it. But, a little bit of me feels to say either get the fuck rid of it, which would be my preference, but then you do have the problem of don't want everything dictated by politicians.
But the trouble is
not as politicians are now, you know?
Yeah, but then you do have the problem of finding disinterested parties at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe like a second chamber could in theory be again not a genuinely practical solution, but you could have either like a jury which might sign off, a jury of maybe 100, 200 people randomly selected to vote on the passing of any laws. Or you could have a referendum. You could find a way to make it like a referendum. That would involve maybe a lot from the public or whatever. But it would be a simple thing. It would be a halt or go type of thing.
Yeah, I think the reason I would lean away from like jury or referendum is I do think like the laws. If you're trying to make laws about, for example, something like child safety online, right?
Okay, yeah.
Like, what you really need is experts.
Yes.
You need experts, but experts who are sensitive to the democratic will. You don't want to completely override the democratic will, but there's times when the people just, that they're not, about a very technical, specific issue, they're not informed enough. A jury or a lottery or, they're just not necessarily going to be informed enough. You want experts.
Technocracy
where you just hand off the decision to experts. I think it's one of those sort of insoluble problems.
Yes, no, it absolutely. The way that you're describing it certainly makes it completely unsolvable. It's just, yeah, because, like, don't get me wrong, I totally, like, one of the things about today's politics that annoys the shit out of me is how reactionary it is. Mm. It's annoyed me for a long time, really, to be honest. Pearl clutching and all that kind of stuff. And it annoys...
At the parliamentary level, just they don't have access to experts because the experts they do have access to are
lobbyists,
and there's sort of that is a difficult problem to solve.
Yeah. I genuinely think people are. I don't want to say like people are too easily manipulated for democracy, but like the way that for example people react to like reform and believe the lies and the bullshit that come out of their mouths makes me think, Christ, is autocracy or technocracy a viable option? Do you know what I mean? Like, is this the shortcoming of democracy that we're witnessing right here? That all you got to do is.
I don't think it's, I mean, what because what we live because yeah, I think.
The but you've always believed
as democracy, but what we have now is the dictatorship of capital. I've always believed.
Oh, sorry, I was going to say you've always believed that people are. Quite good at voting in their own interests, isn't that something?
No, I wouldn't put it that way. But I think we underestimate how much people understand their own political circumstance. yes, they can be manipulated by emotive stuff, but like if you are a working mum, you know what your main problems are. Like, you'll worry over the rent and bills and how you're going to feed and clothe your kids next month, right? That those are your primary concerns, and that's those are the concerns that come out when you're polling. Occasionally, when there's a lot of like lobbying going on for like anti-immigration stuff, you know, something like immigration will float up to the top. But then the ones that stay, you know, in those top five are things like rent, food, cost of living. You know, it's cost of living stuff for the most part.
The number of people, because I live in an area where there's not a huge amount of immigration, but there is some. But the number of people who are not really affected by it complain about immigration just worries the hell out of me.
Well, I mean, that's largely the pattern. Yeah, the places that don't suffer from much immigration are the places most up in arms about immigration.
I think
that's complicated, but I think one of the big sort of factors in that is a combination of two things, really. But when people are living side by side to each other, the best way to break down things like racism is just to know people who are on you know, the other side of whatever divide is being created. That works less well during austerity, because then it's easy to manipulate people into blaming the other. And when they're more present, that's easier to do. But generally, when people are well off and comfortable and not worrying about the fucking rent and living next to people who are in some categorical way different from them, you know, you learn that everybody, they're just fucking people. Everybody's just people.
The one thing that, again, another one of the political talking points that I hear way too much of nowadays, and this one probably worries me probably more than immigration, is benefits. Where this is coming back up, and this is a big reform thing. That it's like they see the local day drinker or meth head, and they go, oh, well, that's where my tax dollars are going to, blah, 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 blah. And it, like, all the compassion and like the thinking behind it all just disappears. And it's just like,
well, I think that's the legacy of Thatcher, is just like the absolute lack of compassion that people have now.
Yeah,
it's, I mean, it's also, you know, when you know, however many decades of austerity, you know, the more you're pushed down, the more you have to think about your own needs, right?
That's
sort of natural. But then also, I think it's Thatcher's breakdown of society, breakdown of community, which is linked to so many, you know, it's linked to even, you know, things like people going to university and going, you know, moving out of their communities, and going, you know, going to the city to get a job. You can't have, we talked about this before, but you can't have community, you can't have neighbours caring.
Well, I mean, this has all started since the sort of more common usage of the motor car. And I've said it again, Luke Smith, interesting. He's got a really interesting video about how roads have basically fucked us. And he's not wrong. Like it's a weirdly interesting video that I think he's just like talking.
See, what I would want in an ideal world is people to be less mobile. I would want people to stay in their local communities. I mean, sometimes not for everybody, absolutely, but I think if people stayed in their communities, communities would be nicer, and therefore they would become places where people wanted to stay. You know, spread the jobs out, you know, have the infrastructure such that people don't have to actually move out to work, and, you know, that kind of
thing.
Like, just essentially getting people to stay in their communities. That's a really hard sell.
It is a hard sell. But what if, okay, you bring in a law that says, I don't know how this would affect things, but thought experiment, companies have to pay working hours, including commuting. So, so once you leave the house, then you're on the clock.
So they pay for your travel, essentially.
Yeah, or you'd work out some sort of formula for it. But they'd be
much more in favor of home working.
Much more in favor of home working, which again, and that carries with it a whole bunch of other problems, but a whole bunch of other benefits too. The trouble is, because I've looked on for home working jobs before, and Rosie works from home, but she works from home. She didn't always work from home.
I think that's usually how it goes, right?
Because if you're looking for a job where you can work from home, you are competing with the entire country.
Yeah,
and that
that
makes things substantially more difficult. Like I've had very limited success. The only successes I've had with applications from working from home jobs have been where I've been super specifically in the right niche at the right time they're hiring. So for things like working for like vegan based companies and things like that, anything like that you consider a normal job, I don't even get a look in. Whereas I would get a look in if it was somewhere local or somewhere, you know.
So the job, I mean, in a purely sort of capitalistic, whatever, competitional way, like that if everybody's competing with everybody, that means you're more likely to get paid commensurate with your abilities, right?
Theoretically,
the better people will get the better jobs, the better paid jobs, which means, yeah, the talent will be more concentrated.
Yeah.
And the companies that are already struggling are gonna, it would heighten capitalist competition.
I wish we just got rid of the mindset that everyone needs to have a job. Like, that's the because it's gonna come. One of these days, it's gonna come. Like, there were problems when women started working because there was a lot. There was this big shift of extra people onto the workforce. Now that like sort of balanced out overall because then there were more consumers, there were more people on the to whom those businesses were serving as well. But then we're going back to like, well, what if AI gets to the point where it does start replacing people in meaningful ways, in successful ways?
It's going to come eventually. I mean, it's just a continuation of automation, right?
Yeah.
But again, exactly. it's complicated because the problem, the form of capitalism we've got now just isn't investing in. You know, what China is doing, investing in future technologies. We're just not doing that anymore. So productivity has flatlined since like the 70s, like 72, I think, is when it started flatlining.
Yeah.
Because they're just doing stupid financial things which increase their share price but don't actually, make them more efficient or anything. If even capitalism was still functioning properly, then automation can be absorbed.
Yeah.
But without increases in productivity, like you just can't. It will just lead to an absolute dystopia. Yeah, I mean, even to capitalists, you know, even if you're a Hayek capitalist, and this was Carter's thing in the 70s, like they see unemployment as necessary for funding for capital. It's arguable whether it is, but most capitalists see you need an unemployed, a portion of the workforce needs to be unemployed. As a stopgap against inflation and wage increases and stuff like that. So if unemployed people are doing a service to capitalism, which is how they conceive of it, then they should be rewarded for
that. But they're not being rewarded but isn't them not being rewarded fundamentally
part of
the feature, you know. The thing is with the whole benefits talk and all this kind of stuff is that no one ever thinks about it from the economic point of view of giving poor people money is good for the in general environment, you know, the community, the people patronize local businesses, people go out and do things, people are happier, which, you know, reduces crime, all of the knock-on effects. That money just doesn't sit in someone's pocket.
I mean, even just zooming out a bit and just seeing the economy as a collective thing, you know, we make this much surplus.
Yeah.
And rather than just giving it to shareholders, let's share it out amongst the members of society. It doesn't really matter who does the work.
Yeah. But we do know why things like this aren't implemented. Because if everyone gets, I don't know, 10 grand a year or whatever, 20 grand a year, just spread out, shared out as part of the collective, that means that if you're going to want to have to hire a cleaner, you're going to have to make it worth their while because they've got the option to say no. You've basically, if you've got a universal income that can support someone living, you've abolished wage slavery and as such brings with it other problems for capitalists.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, if UBI was introduced right now without changing anything else, then rents and prices would just go up. It would be absorbed. And the people you're receiving UBI would be no better off. So it's got to be accompanied by other stuff, like rent controls and price controls on many goods, and especially energy. But in a system where you've taken care of all that, you've not just made UBI, a stimulus to capitalism, you've made it actually do social good, and then you're in the situation you describe where if you want a cleaner, you've got to pay them.
Yeah, but however, like pensions haven't done that though, have they? Or have they
done what? Sorry,
like caused not inflation, but like, you know what I mean, like gets absorbed into the general costs of everything.
I mean, yeah, I mean, in the sense that everything, you know, if people's incomes go up, then prices go up. You know, that's just a feature of capitalism. You know, there used to be stop gaps on that. Not stop gaps, but stops on that. But now, we really have got to the point that, I mean, this is the feature of sort of neoliberalism, really. It is, we have allowed capitalists to just push people right to the brink of, I mean, what is it? Like a third of children are in, what's the term for, not like starving, but food something. There's a term for it.
Insecurity?
Food insecurity, yeah. A third of children in food insecurity. And that is capitalists just pushing things, you know, right down to the bone.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, a result of low union.
But then, the capitalist argument, well, that's what businesses do.
Well, that's what capitalism does unrestrained, which is why there need to be restraints on capitalism. And, you know, in the past, the unions were that restraint and forced certain laws through and stuff. But now, with very low levels of unionization, we've lost that pressure. That needs to come from somewhere, that balancing. Mm.
And also, of course,
unless we just accept that, yeah, we're just going to live in a fucking dystopia.
But also with companies, that, you know, they throw their money into lobbying and...
Lobbying and fucking share buybacks and just tricks to inflate their share price and, yeah, get more power.
Yeah, it does seem like it's some sort of law of capital that once entity has accrued a certain amount of money, it can then just use that money to accrue more money. And it's like a snowball effect.
It's by design, but by design... there were always constraints. So, you know, it was recognized that this was a weakness of the system and there were constraints on it, even amongst capitalists.
Mm.
Like the early capitalists, right up until the 70s, they didn't want that kind of society where capital ran rampant and for very obvious reasons.
Yeah. Do you think this is like part of a problem where, you know, like CEOs and that tier of capitalists, shall we say, they tend to not hold a job for more than 5 years. So there is this overwhelming short-term thinking in big business decisions. And
yeah, I mean, I think that's a problem in politics and in capitalism. Yeah, yeah, it's, yeah.
There is no long-term thinking.
Inherently short-termist, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, which kind of make things all a bit...
Especially, again, when everything's debt-backed rather than based on... You know, when your share price was going up because you were more productive over time, then that's kind of a healthy system that's working, you know, everybody's benefiting from that. But when your share price is increasing because you're making excessive profits and doing share buybacks, which makes you even more money, which is doing nothing in the economy whatsoever, and, you know, asset price speculation and stuff like that. It's just, I mean, if you could do one thing for the political discourse, it's separate out, you know, the real productive economy from the financial economy, which doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
It just artificially inflates the value of assets.
Do you think that if a politician meaningfully made steps to just bring in a hardline wealth tax, that they just get assassinated?
Again, that's BBC short series based on a novel where they get an actual socialist Labour prime minister gets elected.
Mm.
And then just the entire deep state mobilizes against him and forces him out of office, essentially. I mean, we saw it with Corbyn. Like, he didn't get far enough to trigger that kind of thing, that extreme. Yeah,
no, it was,
the interests of capital would rally against.
Yeah, I mean, like, agree or disagree with Corbyn, you cannot deny that the deep state fucking mobilized against him.
Oh yeah, no,
like
no.
It's just, it's and Bernie Sanders as well to a degree, even though Sanders is perhaps a little bit softer on.
Well, I think there was a little bit weight, and because I mean he didn't get as far as Corbyn in the sense that he didn't get the leadership of the party. He didn't become the nominee. I mean, it works differently there, but he didn't become the if he'd become the nominee, then yeah. But I mean, it was the same. It was basically the same. Playbook, really.
Do you reckon? Because like I think Bernie Sanders could probably style it out a little bit, like him not being, I don't know if in practice he would have been so disruptive to capital.
He was not as far left as Corbyn. No.
And also he might have been a little bit more, dare I say, pragmatic insofar that he would have accepted smaller wins. Like he would have, for example, Medicare for all. Yeah. Like that, they wouldn't.
But you're also starting from a more rightward position in the US. I think he would have triggered the same. I don't think they would have allowed him to become president.
I don't know. Yeah, well, we'll never know, really. I mean,
never know.
I don't know. Weird to think about. Because, like, I don't know, AOC's, like, what, about the same as Sanders, isn't it? She, wouldn't you say?
Mm. I mean, since 2020, both Sanders and AOC have been enormous disappointments. But there have been... there was an election recently. It was, like, I think it was a Senate position or something like that in some Midwest state where they're electing... Yeah, I think it was the first APAC loss.
Oh, yeah, ever. I heard about this. Like,
APAC candidate lost to a pro-Palestinian.
But was it not also one of the races where APAC put the most money in as well?
Yeah, yeah. And so I think that comes back to what we're saying. You know, capitalism is pushing everybody like right to the absolute limit. Mm. I think that's when people start to understand, even if they're not necessarily politically self-conscious about the whole thing, they start to understand that they are being pushed too far, which makes them question, you know, other things. And yeah, I mean, the pro-Israel position is not sustainable long term now, obviously. Probably more so in America because of how their electoral system works versus ours.
And also, for some reason, weirdly more theocratic than us, despite the fact that our head of state is the head of our church.
I
don't know. I feel like there's religious manipulation going on in the States a lot more so.
Yeah, well, I think I was saying the other day, I think we're in group chat, like in the UK, I think we could accept an atheist prime minister. Like, I don't think it would cause...
Well, I mean, what Rishi Sunak, was he Hindu?
Well, I don't know, and that's kind of the
point. Yeah, yeah, right? Yeah.
Whereas America, the point I made in chat, I don't know if this is true, but the point I made in chat was, I think America could accept a Muslim president before they could accept an atheist president.
Hmm.
I think they have a deep need for their head of state to be, in some sense, a religious person. Not a religious figure is going to. I mean, Trump.
Yeah, practicing Hindu, Rishi Sunak, yeah.
Okay. I don't think Trump has. I think it's fair to say, I don't think Trump has any religious convictions, but he pays lip service to it.
Also, yeah, but also he pays lip service to it in laws and stuff, like with the anti-abortion stuff.
Yeah.
Which is anti-abortion stuff, is that truly religious? I guess it is. Is there any utility to that argument outside of religion? Is there any reason? Well, is there any reason why the deep state would care about abortion, for example?
No, I don't think so. I think
the only way I can think of it.
I think it's a philosophical issue that currently religion is representing one side of. Because I don't think it's completely illegitimate to say that fetus is that a person. I mean, not, you know, it's a collection of cells, obviously. It's not literally a person, but it is a potential human being. It is a life, right? I don't think that's a completely illegitimate philosophical question. But for me, and I would lean yes, I would say that is a potential human being. That is something more. It's not just a collection. It's not just a collection of cells in the same way that, you know, scrape some skin cells off my arm. That's a collection of cells. It is something more than that, philosophically. But a woman's right to have sovereignty over her own body massively overrides that.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's nowhere that doesn't put a limit on how late a you know, we all accept that at some point, and it's a gray, obviously it's a gray area, it's a philosophical question, it's not straight up a scientific question.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's super clear cut, so I don't think the pro-life side is entirely philosophically illegitimate. I'd like to see that side represented by not religious figures, because they make it such an absolute thing.
Yeah. Well, that's because anything other than an absolute thing means that you basically what you have to say is, at what point does a human is it a human, right? Now, that's a medical question as far as I'm concerned.
Question, I think that is best left to scientists.
Yeah.
It's best left to scientists to make a judgment on that, and then we base the law on that.
Yeah, definitely. So I don't. That's sort of where I stand. Whereas, yeah, but you can have personal belief, like personal beliefs. If you're personally pro-life, don't be getting or adjust your sex life accordingly, for fuck's sake, as well. Like don't take risks that you can't afford to, you know.
But I do think in America it's become a sort of, I don't know the right words for it really, but it's. Okay, this is trite and often started, but like these right-wing Christians who are anti-abortion are also pro-death sentence, you know, stuff like that. It's just such, at least the Catholic Church is coherent on this like life is sacred position, right?
Yeah. Okay.
And it's so I don't think it's necessarily a sincerely held belief.
Half of these pro-life politicians have forced their mistresses into abortions. Like,
yeah. So it is just it's an issue that you can mobilize a base on, you can get funding on, and that you want to keep an open issue because it remains divisive.
Yeah,
that applies to both sides.
Yeah, it's a manipulation issue.
It's a way of slicing up the electorate and fucking economics.
Well, yeah, you could say it applies to both sides, but it applies to, like, one side gets hurt by this a lot more than the other, right?
Well, no, the Democrats, I think that the record funding that the DNC ever got was when they overturned Roe v. Wade.
No, sorry, when I say to both sides, I mean, like, the people that need abortions. Rather than the people.
Oh, yeah, no, so I'm talking politically. Republicans and Democrats, of course.
Like, yeah, if you're just pro-life and you want to have lots of children or you are abstinent or whatever, that's, you know, one thing. Making other people do or not do things you don't agree with has no consequence on you whatsoever, but it does on the other side. I guess one of the things is the Elon Musk argument, which is because there is a racial component to this, which is, they want white people having as many babies as possible.
Yeah.
And so abortion, gets in the way of that, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, people like Elon Musk, they genuinely, think that white people are at risk. And
do you think he genuinely thinks that, or is that another thing?
I think he genuinely thinks that, yes.
Yeah,
but he is also like South African emerald mine owner,
Yes, yeah, I think that's quite pertinent. To that,
like didn't he say something like, if anyone can prove that my dad owned an emerald mine, I'll give you 10 million quid. And then his dad was like, or something to that effect. It was like, yeah, no, you didn't own that. You stole that. Elon Musk.
Should I talk about my Fedi adventures?
Yes. What we've buried the fucking lead on that, haven't we?
Well, I was going to say near the beginning. I love that. Like, we're at the point now because we got into that pattern of like having a little chat before we started the recording, and all the interesting stuff was in the chat before the recording. So now it's like, it's so quick now. We're like, we barely even say hello. It's like, hello, right? Yeah. Ready?
Yeah.
I was getting increasingly, I don't love the Fedi, like, as in the, the Twitter emulating part of it, Mastodon and so on. I sometimes like it a bit, but as the fundamental nature of it, I don't really love. And Mastodon and the big projects in particular just feel like copies of the things that I don't like about the big corporate internet. I don't see the point of going, we want things small, let's try and make something huge.
Yeah.
Like, let's try and be the CEO of the Fediverse and all that kind of stuff. So I've moved to a project called Snack, or Snack 2 is the current, that's SNAC, and then the number 2. And it is a...
Sorry, can I pause binary. You? I pause you a second there before you get into that? Because I was looking at another Fedi project just now. What's it called? The Reddit one. Lemmy. Now, Lemmy is interesting insofar that it's not like Twitter, it's like Reddit. But I have a Lemmy account for Lemmy... Really just Lemmy reading rather than Lemmy posting. And I'm on, it's called Fedit.uk, Fedit.uk. I do actually recommend this because it's like Reddit, but it's just UK stuff. And it's generally pretty lighthearted. It's not like talking about itself all the time or whatever. I just came across this. Whilst it is federated and people can leave comments and all that kind of stuff, it actually functions as its own website really well as well, which might say something about whether or not everything needs to be federated or whatever. I did this Metro headline just fucking caught my eye, and I had to fucking share it just because we're adjacent to the politics segment. Reform demanded God Save the King is sung after every council meeting, so the Green Party sung all six verses while Reform packed up and left.
Obviously, it's a silly story, but I think it does illustrate something that's deeply the case with reform. Is it's all gestural.
They don't actually care about this shit. It is how hollow it is. And the fact that people buy it, and not everyone buys into it. Like, I'm not saying, you know, this isn't a people is a stupid rant.
It's affluent boomers, right? That is their demo. Because I mean, if they were going after like the people at the bottom, you know, the me's of the world, then they wouldn't be on this anti benefits thing.
No,
they're not the Tories, because the Tories know that they need the benefit people to vote for.
It's a little bit like what people who have a little bit of money and then think that they've got lots of money. It's the one just above.
It's the people who are comfortable.
Yeah.
Not the top, not the CEOs and that. They're not voting reform. But like, it's the middle class aging homeowners.
Yeah. The Thatcherite, the people that Thatcher made.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. If they weren't dead, my parents' generation.
Yeah. Which is a strange generation because they're changing as well. Like, because they are becoming old, but they're becoming old in ways that is much less dignified than old people that I remember. They used to have dignity. Now that boomers are fucking getting old, you're just seeing just army of tracksuits on mobility scooters, and I'm thinking, fuck's sake.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I'm not having to go against
my nan and granddad. Like, my granddad went bowling every day, as in, you know, Crown Green bowling. I'll go with him. I love that game. That's a great fucking game. And they would go dancing once a week. You know, to like an oldie styley, you know, big band kind of like.
And now it's just fucking gross. It's like no. That's kind of where I stand on the t-shirt and jeans things. People just seem to have lost their dignity.
I think that ties into that's how I feel about like the self-infantilization. I think it's another front of that, which, you know, which for me, I know you don't feel this, but like encompasses things like people using the word tummy as a grown man and stuff. Like, come on, it's literally fucking baby talk and buying fucking Lego sets as a 40-year-old.
I'll give you that one because that's not a craft. That's a toy. Yeah.
It's toy.
Whittling, do whittling.
Anime characters or whatever, like fucking
Funko Pops. The idea that hobby is just buying things is that's one of capitalism's worst crimes.
Greatest wins is your hobby is
buying stuff.
Things that we arbitrarily scarcify.
Because I'm slowly getting into a new hobby, sewing. Mm-hmm. I'm learning.
What kind of sewing?
Mostly alterations and repairs. I'm sort of expanding my skill in that.
Seamstering.
Seamstress. I'll take seamstress because it sounds a bit like seamstress, which sounds kind of cool.
Because a while back, I still want to do it. I took up embroidery.
Oh, yeah.
The boiler and no longer switches off.
Oh, okay. Don't want to burn the house down. I see. Embroidery, eh?
Yeah, and I just sort of got overwhelmed with all the stitches I had to learn. I want to return to it at some point because I think it'd be just like I just imagine like watching a show or podcast on and just, you know, doing embroidery. I think would be lovely.
Yeah, I like that idea. Like okay. So the reason I got onto it, sorry, I'm taking you away from your snack, but we'll get back to it, I promise. Because I have been putting shorts up on Instagram and YouTube as well because. You know, and it has been recommending me these sewing videos on Instagram, and it sucked me in. Like, I tell you what, the shorts video format is so addictive. It's worrying. It's so fucking worrying. I get so easily sucked into it. I managed to quit smoking, and this is just fucking hard to pull myself away from. Like,
it is interesting that some people. I think it is one of those like things that just divides people. Some people short form. Some people long form. Because it applies to games as well, doesn't it? You're always like, I like short game. Like, you just like these truncated. Whereas if it's not 3 hours long, I feel like that was nothing. That was the appetizer. Where's my meal, kind of?
Yeah, well, that's why I kind of like the podcast full length shorts.
Wait. This might be it. Do you like tapas?
I do like tapas, yeah.
There you go. Yeah, that's the same fucking thing. That's not a fucking meal. That's a bunch of appetizers.
But then, yeah, I mean, but like, what vegan hasn't had to make a meal out of appetizers before?
That's the fundamental problem then, veganism.
Yeah. It's just tapas with extra steps. Just say you like tapas. That's but yeah, so these videos have got me sort of, they've hooked me into the sewing craze again. And there are and it is interesting how gendered, like female gendered it all is as well. Like men's sewing stuff is, well, it's more like men's style stuff is all about buying shit.
All men's hobbies are just about buying shit. Women's hobbies, obviously, we acknowledge this is a socially constructed thing, but yeah. Women's hobbies are about making things, broadly speaking. Yeah.
They have proper hobbies.
Yeah,
come on, men got to bring back their hobbies: woodworking and whittling and.
The bike, like knitting and crocheting. Knitting, yeah, and I mean, yeah. I know men who knit and crochet. Like, I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but yeah, I mean, again, I'd sort of, it just looks fucking. My mum used to knit, and like she was like, you know, it's rapid. And so whenever I've tried to knit and I'm doing like one stitch every 30 seconds, I'm like, I'm comparing myself to my mum. I'm like, I'm terrible at this. It's pointless. But the idea of get a podcast and just knitting away, I'd love that.
Yeah. Yeah,
have you thought about? Do you think you might move up to like making your own clothes from scratch?
That would be a good long term kind of goal.
I think you'd be good at that with your interest in. I don't want to call it fashion. I don't mean fashion in the sense that you know it's usually, but you know your interest.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
The aesthetics of clothing.
Yeah, I would do, but the thing is that when it comes to cost, it is so much cheaper to go to a charity shop, find something that you know. You can alter, and then and then alter that rather.
Yeah, I mean, alterations. Yeah,
fabrics are expensive, especially just like your raw virgin fabrics.
Well, like you say, just going to, I know because Danny does this kind of stuff, and like she's been to fabric shops, and like buying enough fabric to make a dress costs
the same as a dress,
more than like a mid range dress, let alone like a charity shop dress or
So it's what I'd like to do as well, because you know I've got a very strong thrifty bent, is to be able to go into a charity shop, even like a really shitty charity shop, and then be able to like take some stuff, work on it, put something really nice together. But one of the things I see on the shorts videos that I do want to work up to is sewing in little motifs into your clothing. So a little bit of embroidery, a little bit, so that you could just have. But they're all very, very feminine. Now, don't get me wrong, I like a bit of femininity, right? But like, you know, some bows and flowers are a lot of what they do there.
If you go back to the Middle Ages, the men, you know, the kings, it was all flowers and bows, and like it was all you know, things that are now feminine coded.
But like also, you know, maybe some other thing, like skulls. I'll do a big manly skull or a dagger or some, you know,
a rape.
I'll do a bicep, just a little. I kind of like the idea of possibly sewing in some motifs into my clothing, just something on the collar, like a little, like a little flower or a dragon.
Flowers would be nice. Yeah, I think flowers lend themselves, I think, to being embroidered. You know,
or maybe I could develop my own signature motif and just put that everywhere.
Yeah, like your coat of arms.
Yeah.
I mean, literally a coat of arms, but you know, an emblem.
Yeah. Well, my family's coat of arms is a bit religious-y. I don't like it.
What is it?
I think I could probably show it to you. I've got these books. Oh, I don't have them here. That like have like the history of have had my family history really boring. We got our immemorial achievement because two people married each other and they were given a priory as a wedding present, and that they were named after that priory. That priory is called Ware Priory. So very, 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 very boring. And my name was spelled differently back then.
Oh, how was it spelled?
W-E-A-R-E. So it's
that doesn't clear up the pronunciation. I was hoping it would be something that was distinctly Ware rather than Weir.
WEARE. That's pretty wearish, isn't it?
I would read that as Weir, I think, by default, as they do with your surname. I think I first called you Weir.
I mean, there is no official pronunciation.
Mm.
In the research that my granddad commissioned, it's basically it could be Weir, Weir, Were. Like that, if you pronounce it one of those ways, good enough.
Okay, say this coat of arms in that heraldic language.
This coat of arms in what?
No. Say the like, you know, an escutcheon, a field of.
Oh,
whatever.
Right. Oh my fucking god! They use vert.
Vert. Yeah.
Vert and silver. Is it? Is those? Is that what? The, is
silver,
that what?
What's Latin? What's Latin for silver? Egg something.
Because
that's what they say for like white and silver, don't they? Like egg. Oh, I can't remember.
Let's see. Okay, what do we got? Let's see.
That heraldic language has the sort of feel to it as the shipping forecast.
Yeah.
It's got a very sort of rhythmic quality to it.
Where small I can't see where it says the thing. Description, coat of arms description. It's in the book I've got, but it's downstairs. Yeah, yeah. Let's have a look. Silver argent is silver.
Argent, of course. I'll find an example of the.
Because apparently heraldic arms do not actually have official visual representations. Their official representation is the description.
Yeah.
So as
yeah.
long as it fits that description, it can look however the fuck you want it to look. Also, of course, not to be confused with a crest, which is different. A crest is what goes on top of the helmet, so you know who's who. But crests would usually be more individualistic, so that you, for obvious reasons, you want to know who's who in a battle.
To find, like, a complete example.
Yeah. Armorial, also known, of course, as armorial achievement. Mm. And what you'd usually have is you'd usually have a color, like a fabric color, which would be something like. Black, sable, vert, green. Oh, I don't know what the others are. Red, blue,
azure for blue.
And then you'd have like a metal color, which would be yellow or white, gold or silver, and then you'd match the two. So your family colors would be white and green, white and black, or yellow and green, yellow and black. But you can't have like yellow and white, and you can't have blue and green. You have to have, you know, one metal, one fabric. That's how it that's how it goes.
Not bad coat of arms. Just make those crosses into daggers.
Oh, daggers. See, I always wondered if I were ever going to get a tattoo, I could get the coat of arms, but then it would make it look like such a white supremacist tattoo, wouldn't it? I don't get why so many people have tattoos nowadays as well.
I don't like tattoos, and I just aesthetically, I mean, first of all, there's no image that I'm confident enough that I'm going to like in even 5 years. You know, I mean, there's that aspect of it.
Yeah,
and then there's just aesthetically, I just don't think they look nice. I don't judge anybody who has them. Like, I'm not a snob. But just personally,
says the man in a torn-up shirt. Yeah, you're not a snob.
Wow. I also don't like piercings. I find piercings unappealing as well.
Yeah, I'm not fussed on piercings either. No, I don't see the point. And okay, this is going to sound so unsexy, but I look at them and think that's a health and safety problem, isn't it? Really, like, isn't it? Isn't it? Yeah, if it catches on something, like. No, yeah, it's a little bit. I'm the same with you with the tattoos. Is that there is nothing I'm confident that I would like the rest of my life. But that's a little bit like why I can't be religious, because I can't in any way be confident that there's any kind of an afterlife, and that kind of puts the kibosh on it, doesn't it? I can't bring myself to believe
they're not all super. There's really more the Abrahamic ones that are super focused on the afterlife. I mean, you've got, you know, your Buddhism and your Hinduism that are all about reincarnation, or does that count as an afterlife?
I can't.
But at that point, I mean, if you're reincarnated under the way Buddhism or, like, you have no memory of your past life, so it's like, what, there's nothing of you really is retained as a consciousness or anything. So that's the same as having no afterlife, really, from a subjective point of view.
I guess I can take it on board as a metaphor, or like the Lion King, our ashes become the dirt, dirt becomes grass becomes food for the antelope, that kind of thing. Like, I can understand that, like, my death lives on in chemical ways.
The stuff you're made of never dies.
Yeah, the stuff I'm made of never dies.
You know, it might become energy at some point, but
I'll become pure energy. Oh, come on, entropy, bring it on. So
I'm trying to think if there's a world religion that just doesn't have a conception of an afterlife. And I mean, Taoism really doesn't. I mean, in the philosophical Taoism doesn't really talk about it, I don't think.
And I don't,
it's not really a religion, though.
Yeah, I just, it's just because the idea that we have one life, let's make the most of it, that sounds like a religious teaching. That sounds well, a bit.
I hate that idea. I want there to be a continue. Like the I want to exist forever.
I don't know if I do. I think I think I'd just like to be put to rest.
Yeah, no. The idea of not existing is fucking terrifying.
I kind of find it relaxing.
I think that's another one of those things that divides people. Yeah, I cannot understand that point of view.
Like, I wouldn't like to go tomorrow. But okay, and maybe given the choice, I'd like to live a substantially longer. I do feel that, you know, 85 years or whatever is a bit short.
I definitely want, like, so I would want immortality, but you don't want to just be floating around during the heat death of the universe for infinity. Like,
exactly.
That would be boring. But, you know, up to that point, yeah, no, I just want to...
10,000 years?
Oh, no, longer. Like, built trillions.
You want to, trillions? No, 10,000 years would be plenty.
I mean, ideally, if the heat death thing doesn't happen, and the universe is self-sustaining, then yeah, infinity.
Would you just go from planet to planet and just get in your spaceship and go, right, okay, off for another?
If you're immortal, don't even need a spaceship. Just jump.
just jump.
Long,
I mean,
journey,
okay, yeah, like, yeah, I mean, yeah, but like, there's a boredom issue here, isn't there? Because it's a bit like,
well, you take a backpack with a lot of books.
Yeah, but you're talking like literally
trillions of years.
Yeah, like you're going to be able to recite those books like
3 miles an hour.
Yeah, it's. I mean, because it's perpetual motion, isn't it? So, like, so yeah. If you get in a rocket, like, you can turn a trillion years into, like, I don't know how fast the rocket is. 50.
Okay, well, okay, I'm sorry, you're provoking. So I've been watching a lot of physics stuff lately,
mm-hmm.
and there's a lot of problems in physics. And one of the problems lately is, so the James Webb Space Telescope,
mm-hmm.
Which can look further away than we've been able to look before, and therefore further back in time,
mm-hmm.
has found galaxies that are far too advanced and far too big to fit within our conception of how the universe works. Right, so these galaxies exist very like I think I can't remember the numbers, but like within millions of years of the Big Bang,
yeah,
and we've got no physics that explains them being as developed as they are at that time. So either something's very wrong in our measurements, or something's very wrong with our conception of how the universe formed, or third option, for reasons I don't entirely understand, we are inside a black hole.
Okay.
So our universe, because I mean, not because, like, this is going to be physically dodgy. For I apologize to anyone, but like the big Bang and the black hole are kind of similar in that they're mm-hmm. both just but they come from, there's a singularity is involved.
Mm-hmm.
The big Bang is a singularity that explodes in the universe,
mm-hmm.
and a black hole is a singularity in the middle. Or, you know, yeah, so. I think one of the ideas is the singularity goes both ways, so a black hole is a white hole on the other side. Anyway, point is, we might just be inside a black hole.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're inside a black hole, then most universes could just be the insides of black. So we could be inside a black hole that's within a bigger universe. And then that bigger universe could be inside its own black hole that's inside another, you know, and so on and so on and so on.
Okay, yeah.
So all black holes could be universes. All universes contain black holes which have universes inside them. And so the reason I brought that up is because then you've potentially, if you're immortal, got infinity universes to go to.
Oh, yeah, but you got to get to them. Yeah.
Yeah, but there's, other than the physical problems, you there's no problem with you. So one of the things that relativity says is that if you're observing somebody going into a black hole, they just freeze when they get to the event horizon, right? From your point of view.
Yeah.
They never actually cross the threshold. But subjectively, that person would be crossing the threshold. They would be fucked from the gravity and or whatever, but if you're immortal, not a problem. Don't know how that's solved physically, but like, so you could cross that threshold.
Yeah, but what if you're stretched out into a million different molecules? You hardly...
Well, I'm assuming like a sort of Deadpool-y kind of immortality where you just come together afterwards, you know, it sorts itself out.
It sorts itself out, okay.
and like, over billions of years, that black hole emits you as Hawking radiation. And then that radiation gets back together into a person again, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose...
Pushing the limits of immortality.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think, I don't know. If there's a god, it's like, fucking hell, this guy again. You give him immortality.
This is on the limits of physics, obviously, but he was arguing against Roger Penrose, so there was an actual physicist there arguing with this dude. There's this dude who thinks that we are essentially, I don't know how to phrase this without misrepresenting it, but essentially we are quantum waves.
Mm-hmm.
But we are just sort of like drones that the quantum waves are controlling. So when we die, the quantum wave goes like, oh, I learned a lot from that one. Let's fire up another one kind of thing. And we are just fundamentally, we are outside of whatever. We are quantum waves controlling stuff.
We're quantum waves controlling
stuff. So there's your afterlife.
I mean, it's not impossible that when I die, when any of us dies, that a long time in the future, they work out what consciousness really is. And then everyone who's ever lived can be reconstructed either virtually in a machine, or
they've got your distro reviews and they're like, I really want to meet you. that's the basis of their culture, your video. That'd be
cool. Well we've got Space Arch now. What would you think about Space Arch? Ubuntu 2 Linux Peppermint. lazy Linux.
Lazy Linux.
That's like Slackware, but you know, lazyware.
Oh, Slackware! No, Slackware will be the one that's still just Slackware.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, Gen 3, well, Gen 2. But, yeah,
oh, Gen 3. That was good. That was good.
That was fun. Okay. Anyway, that was a deviation. But you've been mucking around with Snack.
Yeah, so it's all Snack, and Snack is like a Fediverse server compatible with the Mastodon API, whatever it's called. It's a single binary written in C. Doesn't even have a database. It uses files.
Lovely.
And you install it. You wrap it in. We don't even have to, but you can wrap it in. You know, wrap it in a caddy verse proxy. And yeah, I installed it. I ran it, and it just immediately worked, which was very different from setting Mastodon up. And a big step up from even like Pleroma and that, like not having to worry about the database stuff. Yeah, I just span it up and I was like, yep, I like this, I'm going to switch over. It just feels smaller, it just feels more under my control. It sort of makes the Fediverse more what I want it to be. The problem I've always had before when I've done like a single user instance is like just the federation is a problem. Like you don't see everything, you don't see all replies, you know, because it's not pulling everything necessarily, because it's not got the enormous number of users that are making sure that everything's pulled. But I've become more okay with that. I'm sort of starting to see that as a feature, just a little bit quieter.
Yeah. Hmm. So literally, you're just... So you run it like Owncast, right? You get your binary, you run your binary.
Mm-hmm.
What setup is there beyond that?
So you do... so it's called... The binary is called Snack. So you do Snack, and then the name of the folder you want it to use.
Mm-hmm.
And then you do init, and that sets it up. And once you've done that, you just run Snack. You do snack, httpd, and then that folder that you just told it to use, and then that's it running. You wrap that in a systemd service, and that's it. That's literally it. And when you do snack in it, it just says what's your username. I don't even ask you anything. I think it's basically just what's your username. That's it. And so it all, because it doesn't use a database, everything, that folder that you pointed at, that is the, that's everything. So I did it, I had it on my Oracle VPS, and then I was like, I really like this. I think I want to stick it on my, because it also, there's a CLI interface for posting and stuff as well. So I was like, I want this on a local computer. So I just took that folder, copied it to my, you know, PC server, and then just ran snack again. It just picks up where it left off. There's no like database migration or any of that bullshit. It just immediately was like, yep, I'm the same thing.
That's amazing.
And yeah, it does handles Mastodon migration really easily. That was
question. If you wanted to have, if you had a server and you wanted to have multiple users, do you just run multiple instances of Snack?
No, it can. The Snack handles multiple users.
Fuck. Oh.
Yeah, just it doesn't. I mean, I assume that with it being file based rather than a database based, there's going to come a point where, you know, you're hitting up against the efficiencies of that, I would imagine. But the way I got to this was, there's another project called Little Web, Little Feddy, which is a simple. So Snack is really low resources, very comfortably can run like on a Pi Zero. Little Web is also, it's not as low resource as Snack, but it's significantly lower resource than, you know, Pleroma or Mastodon, very much so with Mastodon. So Little Feddy is a work in progress currently. It's not released at the moment, but everything the dude's saying about it sounds really interesting. That uses SQLite by default. You can use a full database if you wanted to. But they've also got this thing. Their idea was that they wanted people to be able to run it on home infrastructure.
Yeah.
So without a domain.
Okay.
So they've also written this Lighthouse thing that they call, where it's sort of like, that acts as the, I don't really understand it, but they've done a thing so that you can just literally, a person can just run it on a computer and have, you know, it has an address and everything without you having to do anything, is my understanding, which is cool.
Like an IP address or a...
No, I think the Lighthouses act as the domain for it or somehow.
Oh, okay.
And they have a domain and they have the SSL certificates and some kind of like meshy thing. And it, you know, gets around NATs and all that. You don't have to do port forwarding. You don't have to do, you know, a Caddy or Nginx or anything. Don't really understand how it works, so I can't talk much about it. But yeah, so Snack is more bare bones than that, and I went with the more bare bones one. But yeah, little Feddy looks really interesting as well. And it's got a feature I mentioned to you where you can just, you're writing a post on the Feddy, and you go like, I want this to be a blog post, and it can just be it's a blog post within the same. I'll show you did you go to the example thing?
Yet? Yes.
Yeah. So did you see the blog button up at the top?
The blog button at the top. Hang on a minute. Right. So
yeah. So.
Custom styles for Snack. That's
I want to find the actual. Yeah, so here we go. So I give you this link.
Yeah.
So up at the top there. So this is the example instance of it running.
Okay, it looks nice.
Yeah, it looks really good. This is Little Feddy. This isn't Snack.
This is Little Feddy. Okay, yeah.
At the top there, blogs.
Yep. Oh.
And then I wanted it to go to go to the bottom and go to Stefano because he's actually done blogs.
Okay.
Stefano. Yeah. Marinelli, he's a BSD dude. It's quite cool.
Okay, yeah.
And then you've got, it's literally like a little static, and it's static, but it also could include comments because these are also Fediverse posts.
Ah,
so
okay.
It's a static page that's generated, but also includes the comments and stuff.
Gets regenerated periodically or something.
Yeah. I think just when somebody comments, it will regenerate. So if you click on one of those blog posts,
I'm seeing replies.
Basically, you install a Fediverse server and you get a free static blog at the same time.
Oh, that's going to put Blop out of business.
Yeah, my share price is...
Oh, and you were hoping to get another t-shirt with holes in it.
I just be the holes.
Just the holes, yeah.
I think this is a really cool project.
Hmm.
Like, I think I'm sticking with Snack. I like the idea of Little Feddy, but I think I like the complete bare bonesness of Snack. But yeah, both very cool.
But I like the look of that. Snack. My immediate temptation, you say it's got a command line interface for posting and stuff. Mm-hmm. What we could do is we could put Snack on the freebooter server and then have that post out.
Yeah, no, that'd be cool.
Podcasts.
See how many users it can cope. I mean, Little Feddy might be better for that.
I mean, like, just have the one account, but like to put new podcasts out on it.
Yeah. For our propaganda wing, essentially.
Our propaganda wing, that's it. Yeah, our Ministry of Truth.
That'd be cool. Yeah. I think you'd have fun setting it up as well, because it's like I say, it sets up really simply.
I'm assuming it's just so yeah, like it gets set up, and then I can put in as part of a script, maybe like once and I don't know, every couple of hours it will just like toot out the latest.
Yeah.
Or toot out something.
Yeah. When you're doing it on the CLI, you can do snack. Note is the command to say I'm writing a post. And you can do dash E and it will just open up Vim or whatever you're
editing. Oh, lovely.
You just type it in Vim and which is very cool.
Yeah.
You can also pipe in a standard input and do posts. Like it's just I like the CLI backing and it also being the server. I think that's really cool.
Oh, I love it when a project has like the proper values. Because also I remember with Snack that no AI accepted, which is nice.
Yeah.
No cookies, JavaScript free. Like I'm probably not as that vehemently anti AI as a lot of people on the Fedi, but I really respect the stance. Like I think that it will become a problem if we just let it infiltrate everything that we do, because I feel like we're going to end up with a whole bunch of bugs and mechanisms that we don't know how they work. And I think brings its own problems.
Yeah.
So it's.
Yeah. And I like that it almost takes. Well, Snack apparently stands for social networks are crap.
Hey! It's a
social network made by people who hate social networks, which I think suits me.
So it's the requirements are libssl dev, libcurl for openssl dev, which sound to me like stuff that you'd already generally have installed, right?
Maybe not the dev versions on the Debian.
What is the dash dev versions? Is that like the development version?
Yeah, so it's the it's the versions you need if something has this as a build dependency rather than a runtime dependency.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
In Arch, they're all in the same package. It's both are in the same package, but in Debian, they're separate.
Okay. And with BSD, FreeBSD, NetBSD, it's just curl.
Yeah.
Source code, but you just get testing via Docker. Oh no, thank you.
I pulled the Git repo, which took when you pull a Git repo and it takes like couple of minutes, and you're just sitting there waiting. This took like a second to pull the Git repo, and then when I did make, that took another second. It was just make done, and then did make install, and then I just ran it. It was the simplest installation I've ever done.
So Mastodon compatible apps can be used, Tusky and stuff.
Front ends and Tusky.
This is one of those things about Mastodon that I'm like, why? Like, it makes so much sense for there to be projects that don't even have a front end. Like, do you need a front end for so many Mastodon apps? When if you're using it on your phone, you're going to have an app of choice anyway, which comes with all the features that you need.
What's the one that Wing uses? What's the fairly lightweight one?
Pinafore?
No.
Fanpy?
No. It's
Brutaldon.
Go to social.
Go to social.
That one just is a back end. You have to use I think I like actually have a look at Snack. So the interface in Snack is just done with a single CSS file, right?
Yeah.
If you go to the default one is like quite clearly intentionally ugly.
Okay. Where's the default one?
The default one, the author of it is using the default one. So if you go there.
Okay.
For listeners, that's comam.es/snack/grunfink, grunfink.
Okay.
That is like, that's aggressively like unstyled.
See, but it looks nice. They use a serif font, which is interesting.
I assume that is just the default. If you actually look at the CSS, there is barely any. So it's as little CSS as they can get away with.
Oh, is this CSS in the HTML file itself?
No, it should be.
Because there is a bit of CSS in the HTML file itself.
There is. Oh, maybe it takes it from the. Yeah, that might be all of the CSS then. Yeah, it might just.
Gotcha. Because I've often thought about when doing clock whether or not to, rather than to have a CSS file, to take the stuff in the CSS file and put it into the HTML.
Yeah.
Because there are, as I understand it, it's one less call for a client to make.
Yeah.
Which is academic, but the reverse of that is that if you want to make any CSS changes, you have to regenerate the whole website. Whereas if I'm mucking around with CSS,
if your script is doing that anyway.
Yeah, but sometimes if I'm messing around with CSS, then I like the quick, like, change something, refresh, change something, refresh.
Yeah.
And also, because the template at the moment is baked into Plock, then having a CSS file that isn't gives the end user something easy to change and set and everything.
Yeah.
Although I suppose that would be the same even if it just took style.css and then just bundled it in some style tags and then stuck it in the HTML.
Yeah, I think like you say, when you're fiddling with the CSS, it is nice for it to be external and just be able to fiddle with it and refresh. Yeah,
rather than compile it out. But you know, but yeah, no, that doesn't look too bad at all, really. I kind of like it. Yeah, what happened? It's
obviously intentionally very basic, but
yeah. Yeah, scales well. Oh, and it gives an RSS feed as well.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. Damn, I might actually have to give this a go.
I think you'll like it. I do. I think it'll suit you.
So, yeah. Okay. It'd be nice. It'd be nice to have my own domain for a thing.
Yeah.
I do think I like toot.wales as well. Like, it's really well, like, managed. You know, it's got proper, you know, responsible people, and they've had in real life meetups and stuff before as well.
Oh, really?
I think they do it regularly. I think they do it like once a month or something like that. Yeah, like, it's a really good team of people that have built something really nice with Toot Wales. So I don't know if I completely abandon that, because I think that when it comes to things like the Fedi, there is value in having people clumped together in small, you know, communities with a purpose.
Yeah. And I think you're more comfortable than I am. And I think it's the right approach, your approach of having like multiple IDs, like have an account here for like for different purposes or whatever, different moods. Whereas I tend to just want something, everything in one.
Yeah, I mean, administratively, I like everything in one, but like, I've done quite a lot of like research over the years about particularly things when it comes to like putting stuff out on the internet, that have being able to put your stuff in a little box definitely works well with any kind of sorting algorithm or what people expect. Like, the example I always think of is music channels on YouTube, right? Now, there'll be some musicians, I like their music. Do I give a shit about the behind-the-scenes stuff? No. Yeah. You know, like, so when a music channel starts putting behind-the-scenes stuff on the same channel they put their music out on, it's just waste. So have a separate channel.
I go completely the other way. I'm just like, I won't click on those videos. But I still want, there might be the occasional thing that I'm interested in. So I just want it all in one place. But I get the other side. Yeah. I completely get it.
Yeah. Especially when it's like, well, three behind the scenes video for every music video, whatever. It's like, what am I even doing now? You know?
Yeah.
So, but Snack. Oh, wow. Okay. I was waiting for this. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I think I have been as well. Something actually lightweight. And sort of basic is kind of underselling it, but yeah. It also, no JavaScript. I'm pretty sure no JavaScript on the interface.
Yeah, no JavaScript on the, yeah. That's also really good. I like that. Okay, I'll tell you what. Where's the guy's, I've lost it. Okay, I'm going to see what this looks like in Dillo. Okay. So, right. Oh, yeah, it looks fine in Dillo. Looks nice in Dillo, actually.
Yeah. I think, yeah. It is just because it is just straightforward HTML, yeah.
The one thing that Dillo doesn't, and I'm pretty sure they do this deliberately, although I'm not sure why, Dillo don't support central blocks.
What do they not support? Like the auto margin?
I think it's the auto margin, yeah.
Yeah, right. You'd have to do it the old way with a table.
Does it support? Yeah, it probably does support tables, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But you still like a table and then center and then
Before CSS, all layout used to be done with tables.
Yeah, I remember those days.
Okay. So you essentially have a table with one row, and you'd set the first row to like 33%, and set the third row, sorry, the first cell to 33% width. The last one's 33% width, and then the middle one takes up 33%, or you know, whatever percent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or you know, sometimes you do 200 pixels on the left, and then.
Right, it's getting too fucking hot. Shall we?
Okay. So, Oh, hang on. Just before we do go, yeah, we're putting shorts up on Instagram, and interestingly enough, people have been looking at them. So, and actually, I kind of like the idea of doing short content as our, like, I don't know, for public consumption. Not for public. What do you mean? Like, as our, like, this is something we do that is compatible with mainstream sensibilities.
Outreach.
And then we've got the full podcast over on freebooters.uk for people that want the full gear. However, of course, we're also, you can find us on Spotify now. And Space Virgin. Sorry, Hamish. But we're still hosted.
What's the most evil thing we're on?
Probably Spotify now, is it?
Yeah. It's not YouTube. The whole thing is not. Oh no, you said YouTube. Yeah.
Yeah, because YouTube. Yeah, but YouTube podcast now. Like, so either or. But to be honest, specifically with Spotify, I don't think the hosting's done by Spotify. Like, it draws from our RSS feed.
Yeah.
So it's but
listed,
as I said in the Discord, Spotify comes installed on most cars these days. So if you want an easy way to listen to us in the car.
I mean, I'm not against it. Yeah, I'm always like, go where the... It's stupid to artificially not go where the people.
Well, the thing is as well is that it's just... I'm just linking in the RSS feed. Same thing with YouTube. Yeah. I just link in the RSS feed. I think with YouTube, it lifts the whole thing over, but it is still just... So why not... You know, it's just an RSS. They could do it themselves if they wanted to. Like, there's nothing that, you know... At least I get to, like, I don't know, sign it off or verify it or whatever, like it.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah.
They do have a system in place because I need to edit Plock, because you need to have like a website email address, which is just my public email address, because they use that to then verify that you are the owner of said podcast. But
we're on Apple,
not Apple yet. I haven't really bothered with Apple.
A lot of people do use that. Might be worth.
I'll probably get around to that at some point. I mean, we've got the Apple tags in there and stuff like that, so.
Yeah.
Although I feel like Spotify has overtaken iTunes, Apple Music as the podcasting. The thing is, it's like I listen to podcasts on AntennaPod, and I just search in AntennaPod, and we're on AntennaPod. So,
what is that? Is that another sort of
podcast? Oh no, AntennaPod is just an open source podcasting app. It uses you can search on it because it uses one of the open source directories. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So it's we're on the the open source directories, all that kind of stuff. That's cool. So is Space Virgin. So is ours. Is the theory for you Game of Thrones fans out there? I am kind of enjoying how the Instagram is panning out as well. We've got a few people. Drew's already started getting flack for the flag again. Lovely. we should come up with a plot-based reason, like you're actually a spy, but we don't know if you're a Russian spy for England or an English spy for Russia. That's the bit we've got to work out yet.
Also a time traveller.
Or a time traveller. Yeah, a time traveller from the, 70s?
Yeah, you don't want to break it to me that we're not in the 70s.
Anymore. Yeah. We've got to maintain the fact that we're still in the 70s. Which is...
in my bunker.
Yeah. But we got I'm just looking at the it's hundreds of views really, but a couple of them have got thousands. So
cool.
Which, to be honest, is that's the thing. Like, a video on YouTube gets fuck all views these days. Shorts on YouTube, loads of views. Shorts on Instagram, loads of views. Like, shorts is just what people want to watch these days.
Yeah, I'm sad about it, but
the thing is as well, there is a way to hack the system. Shorts count as anything that is like, I think a short can be a square video too. So we could go square video.
Oh.
And then it's kind of a bit of both.
Yeah.
So would you prefer,
is my favorite.
I thought not 4-3, but actual proper square.
Well, only 4-3 because it's the closest common one to square.
Well, square is maybe coming in because square works on phones. Square works a little bit on screens. Yeah.
No, I'm cool with square.
So you would actually opt for square because Instagram seems to okay. We'll have to do the next reboot of square because I think like we can fit into square
and on the audio one as well. We'll do square audio.
Square. Our audio is always Square.
Our MP3s will be 480 by 480.
Yeah, no, I think that, well, our MP3s are, yeah, they're MP3, they're just MP3s, but the picture for them is Square. Except Space Virgins, which for some reason I've grandfathered over the 16x9 thumbnails, which I don't really, maybe I should go to Square thumbnails.
Yeah, I think Square, yeah, I think, yeah. When I'm listening to a podcast, like, because I don't use my phone, it's usually in MPV, but it's always in a two windows side by side, so Square. Yeah. Even on my, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we could certainly move towards Square. It's actually interesting enough. Square is easier to work with. You've got the lack of width. Can be a bit restrictive, you know.
Yeah.
Actually, I do. I have been thinking about doing a shorts channel for gaming again. I reckon that could.
Yeah,
that could be a thing, you know, and like, because shorts now, like, I think of shorts as less than 3 minutes, and that's generally what I would go with. But I think Instagram shorts are like less than 15, and TikTok is like that too, as well. Really? Yeah,
yeah,
or less than 10, I think.
Quite long for a short.
Yeah, so I think it's honestly like we think of shorts as a platform or a media distinct from the old school YouTube video that we know, but. Mm. I'm not entirely sure it is. I think
old school YouTube.
Just tilted vertical. But if if one by one works, then I don't know. We've managed to hold on to the past, guys.
I'm literally melting. We're gonna end it.
All right.
Toodaloo. Myself in hot water.
Cool. All right. Farewell, listener.